Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, I'm your host, Ashley Cutnow. I'm a partner with Ogletree Deacons in our Greenville, South Carolina office, and I am the co-chair of the COVID-19 litigation practice group for the firm. Our topic today surrounds COVID-19 litigation claims in relation to workers' compensation reform. My guest speaker is Michael Nail. Michael is a senior associate in the Ogletree Greenville office. Michael is a litigator and has many years of experience in the workers' compensation arena. So let's dive right into it, Michael. Since the beginning of COVID-19, we have seen a variety of different legislation that's been passed in response to the pandemic. Are states revising workers' compensation rules in response to COVID-19?
They are, Ashley, and thank you for having me on today. I'm excited to be here. We've seen changes implemented by different states around the country. In particular, there have been 13 states that have implemented changes. And what I mean by changes, I don't want to use the word legislation because there's been legislation that's been passed. There's been executive orders issued. And there's also been a few states that have implemented emergency rules under their workers' compensation system by the Workers' Compensation Commission. So I use the word changes in that respect. There's also pending legislation in 10 different states right now. And there's also two states that I put in the category of other, which means that different states, Arizona, one being an example, has issued a substantive policy statement telling employers that they cannot categorically deny COVID-19 workers' compensation claims. They must be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, just like any other alleged workplace injury. So that was a long-winded response to your question, but yes, states have implemented changes to their workers' compensation rules in light of the pandemic.
And I know you mentioned it, but Ogletree Deacons does have a tool that is publicly available on the Ogletree Deacons coronavirus page. Is that the tool that you're talking about that's being updated as states make these reforms in whatever format they're made?
Yes, that is correct, Ashley. We have a tracking tool that is located on the coronavirus litigation resource page, as well as the general COVID-19 resource center page. And we're tracking those. Obviously, as with anything with the pandemic, they are changing rapidly. And we're keeping a close eye on that so that we can give our employers the best information available.
When we talk about the workers' compensation reform that we're seeing in response to the pandemic, what do you think is the purpose of these changes?
Sure. In a nutshell, the purpose of these changes, in my opinion, is to make it easier for workers on the front lines to obtain workers' compensation benefits if they contract COVID-19. The executive orders, as well as the emergency rules that I referenced, will have different language. But at the end of the day, it's to create an easier path for a worker to obtain benefits. Because in the run-of-the-mill case, if someone were to contract COVID-19 and allege that they contracted it at work, they would have an uphill battle to prove that they contracted it at work and obtain workers' compensation benefits. So what these changes will do is create a presumption that the employee contracted the disease at work and make it easier for them to obtain benefits.
When you're talking about a presumption and now the burden is on the employer, you know, how are employers going to rebut these types of claims?
Sure. And this will vary depending on the language of the bill or the other change that has been implemented. Some states will require some evidence to rebut it. That's a very vague term. But if the employer can come forward with some proof that the employee did contract it elsewhere, then that would be sufficient. There's also going to be different burdens of proof for the employer. For example, some states require that the employer rebut the presumption by a preponderance of the evidence, and some have a higher standard that would be clear and convincing evidence. And also recently, we've seen the laws enacted in Utah and Illinois, for example, have included provisions that allow employers to rebut the presumption if they have complied with applicable safety guidelines and guidance that we've all been accustomed to. So there's different ways to rebut it. But at the end of the day, it will be very difficult for an employer to rebut that presumption.
Are these workers' comp reforms, are they limited to a certain industry or is it impacting everyone?
They are not limited to a certain industry. Again, it's going to depend on the specific language, the specific scope of each of these states' changes. I will tell you that most of these states have included healthcare workers, what we have been referring to as first responders, other emergency response workers, but also states have included essential workers, which is usually defined by a respective state's executive order. It can be a variety of critical infrastructure, for example. It can be grocery store workers, pharmacy workers. And if a state has used the term essential worker, they will have a broader class of workers that would be potentially covered.
Interesting. And, you know, and I know when these changes started being made across the country, it was during the time period when many folks were shut down or, you know, working from home, shelter in place orders were in place. Are these rules and changes that we're seeing permanent? Do they have an expiration date on them or is it just a mixed bag?
Well, that's a good question. So most of these laws have a sunset date of the end of the year, December 31st, 2020. Some have gone into March of 2021, early 2021. But most of them do have a sunset date. So that's another thing that we'll be keeping an eye on is whether there are new laws passed, either changing the state of the law or expanding the coverage dates for these employees.
And I would think if you've got some of the changes that are being made through executive orders, like in California, the governor could just extend the executive order or change that date pretty easily.
They could. And it's funny that you mentioned California, because California currently does not have a presumption in place for that reason. One of the executive orders that made headlines about a month or two ago was California's executive order because it was a little bit more expansive than others. But that expired on July 5th. Even though California has multiple pieces of legislation pending, none of those have been passed. So it is expected that Governor Newsom will issue another executive order clarifying or expanding the presumptive coverage. But right now, California does not have a presumption in place.
Interesting. Now, I know when we talk about all of these changes as a result of COVID-19, you know, it's hard for employers to keep up. It's hard to know what's good and what's bad from an employment perspective. Could workers' compensation reform actually benefit employers in some circumstances?
It could. It could, Ashley. And, you know, in a perfect world, an employer does not want any of their employees, obviously, to contract the virus. They don't want to have any type of workers' compensation claim or lawsuits stemming from these issues. But if you are faced with the situation of having an open workers' compensation claim for a COVID-19 contraction versus having to deal with state or federal court litigation on the topic, such as a negligence-based cause of action, it would usually be more beneficial to be in the state's workers' compensation system. As you know, as an experienced litigator, being in state or federal court can be lengthy and costly for employers. And there's also heightened risk associated with increased damages potentially, whereas workers' compensation, these claims would usually be resolved pretty quickly. And there are caps on how much benefits the employee would be entitled to receive.
And I'd also think in some cases, your workers' comp insurance may help you cover it also.
Yes, that is correct.
So, Michael, will all claims be litigated by workers' comp commissions, or is there another forum where we may see these claims be brought?
Ashley, if an employee brings a claim and says that they have contracted COVID-19 at work, a workers' compensation commission or other forum for litigating workers' compensation claims should be the proper forum. But is an employee completely prevented from bringing a state court or federal court claim? The answer is no. I will tell you that if that happens and an employee brings a claim in state or federal court alleging that the employer has been negligent in some way and that has caused them to contract COVID-19 at work, it will be met with an early motion to dismiss based on the state's workers' compensation exclusivity provision, or what we often refer to as the workers' compensation bar. We have seen that in early cases, early death cases, where an employee has died and their estate has alleged that they contracted COVID-19 at work and died as a result of the employer's negligence. In those cases, the employer has filed a motion to dismiss, and we have yet to see how the courts will rule on that issue. But that's certainly something that we'll keep an eye on moving forward.
And certainly in those cases, what employers are being faced with is the cost of the factual inquiry to determine if there was intentional action or negligence before you even figure out which forum you're going to be in for the litigation. So that would be an additional cost of discovery and all of that in whatever forum the employee has chosen up front.
It would. And the employee and their attorneys are likely to allege some exception to the workers' compensation bar. The most prominent one is an intentional infliction of harm or a substantial certainty that harm will have occurred. Whether that court ultimately rules on the issue at the motion to dismiss stage or requires some sort of factual development and will decide it at the summary judgment stage, as you referenced, remains to be seen.
Yeah, that will definitely be some cases that we want to stay on top of and really watch for employers around the country, as I would assume different states may rule on that issue differently, depending on what the facts are in front of them at the time.
That's right. That's right.
What if an employer who's listening to this podcast operates in a state that has not passed any kind of liability reform related to COVID-19? What are the things that they should be thinking about as far as workers' compensation is concerned?
Sure. And this is a question that I've been thinking about ever since the pandemic started. In the absence of a presumption, as we've mentioned before, these changes that the states are making, how should an employer analyze it? And it's likely to be analyzed under the respective state's occupational disease statute. I believe that every state has one. And in my opinion, COVID-19 would be different from a workplace accident. When we think of a workplace accident, think of a slip and fall. That's the most prominent example that comes to mind. But when you're talking about an illness or disease, that will be analyzed under a state's occupational disease statute. So every workers' compensation consideration, you want to look at whether an injury or illness arises out of and in the course and scope of employment. The arising out of factor is looking at what the employee was doing. Were they doing something in furtherance of the employer's business? Were they working? In the course of prong is looking at the time and space elements. When did the injury happen? Were they at work or were they on vacation? That's an extreme example, but that's in a nutshell what you look at. But when you turn to an occupational disease, there are more considerations in play. What a state is likely to outline is that the disease or illness must be peculiar to the work, and working created a greater risk of contracting the disease than the public generally. So how these workers' compensation commissions, how these courts will determine whether or not there has been an increased risk of contracting COVID-19 at work remains to be seen. And I'll also tell you that many states have a carve-out in their occupational disease statutes that would not cover quote unquote ordinary diseases of life. This would be the flu, for example. So it also remains to be seen in those states whether the courts or the commission will deem COVID-19 an ordinary disease of life that would be excluded under the respective acts. But when I think of an ordinary disease of life like the flu, I also don't think that employers take nearly any of the same prevention and analysis that they do with COVID-19. I think of COVID-19 more as a potential hazard in the workplace with all of the precautions and guidelines that the employers have to comply with, as opposed to the common flu. So there is an argument, too, that COVID-19 would not be considered an ordinary disease of life. So those are all considerations that an employer will need to consider if their state has not issued a presumption.
Well, and it seems like this is one of those areas of the law that may develop more and more the longer we're forced to live with COVID-19, right? I mean, currently it may not be one of those kinds of diseases, but if it becomes a regular part of our life, which hopefully it won't, it could become one. It seems like this is really an area where we're going to have to work through the repercussions of the pandemic again in the land of employers and employees and how we deal with each other.
That is correct. And I'll tell you, you bring up a good point, because some of the presumption changes, these new laws have actually included COVID-19 in their enumerated list of occupational disease to remove all doubt. So there are some states who have specifically addressed that issue, but particularly in states that have not issued a presumption, it will be interesting to see how that issue develops, how these workers' compensation agencies and possibly courts treat the issue.
Well, that's great, Michael. I really can't thank you enough for joining us today. I'd like to remind our listeners, Michael has created an excellent tracking tool that's available on the Ogletree Deacons coronavirus resource page. And it does lay out what each of the different changes in new circumstances are in each state. So you can go in and look at his excellent tool and see what the rules are in the state in which you operate. And again, Michael, thank you so much for being our guest today. And we look forward to speaking with all of you again on our next topic. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.